today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Patrick, what's that you're eating?
Oh, this? It's a big bowl of rock noise.
Hmm, it looks good. How is it?
Delicious.
Okay, Patrick, so in our never-ending quest to get caught up on our patron episodes...
Yeah, that's right.
The way that works on our show is that we have people who contribute some money and support the show, and one of the perks we give them is they get to come on the show every so often and pick the topic of the show. And so mm-hmm. we've been working hard to get caught up on those lately. And today on Rockin' the Suburbs, I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
Today we have Mike Snyder, who has been a supporter of the show for a long time, even back when it was the old show. He was a supporter in action and spirit. And we are happy to have him on again. And Mike, for your patron episode today, you decided to invite another guest, right?
I did. I think most of the people who listen to the show know that I'm a fan of the band Radke, which hail from my original home area around Kansas City. And I thought it'd be a good chance to catch up with what the band's doing. So Isaiah Radke was nice enough to join us on this episode. So Isaiah, thanks for joining.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And so where are you, Isaiah?
I am in Kansas City, hanging out at my house.
And so, Mike, tell people a little bit about how you got to know this band, and then maybe we can get into, you know, what they've been doing lately, right?
Sure. Isaiah, why don't you tell them who the band is? Isaiah plays bass, and tell them who your brothers are and what they play and how long you guys have been playing.
Absolutely. So I'm going to say we're close to our five, 6 years playing now. We're a band from St. Joseph, Missouri. We're three brothers, and we pretty much grew up on our dad's record collection. We were homeschooled, so that was what music was around. There wasn't a whole lot of the current stuff, or if it was very current, it was just the cool things. So that really helped shape the music. So we ended up kind of just growing up playing rock music to just a bunch of people who are just kind of reminding them that, you know, there's people who are interested in doing fresh rock music, and that's kind of what we do and how we started out.
So you guys were playing at South by Southwest probably 5 years or so ago, and I'd heard of you, but I didn't get to see you. But then that fall, you guys came and played Baltimore, and we met up, and I did a story about you guys for USA Today. I had known about them before. One of our mutual friends, Timothy Penn, who at that point was a music writer for the Kansas City Star, had obviously known about Radke and said, you got to go see these guys. And since then, I've followed their career. They came to USA Today and played when we had a show called Studio A.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they played some songs there, and I got to kind of semi-MC them. And then they played to D.C., and every time they've come to D.C., I think I've seen them every time. And then, unfortunately, they were going to be here a few days ago because they were going to be on the bill of a festival at FedEx Field in Washington, D.C., organized by the Foo Fighters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's bittersweet that I'm seeing you on Zoom, because it would have been fun to see you at FedEx Field.
Totally, totally. That is something. Because I've had friends, you know, it'd be like, oh man, I hope it doesn't get canceled. I'm like, I hope so too. But then things get really crazy, then everything just gets real shuffled up, and then now we're just living in a completely different world.
Yeah.
You guys probably would have had a full slate of shows this time of the year, right?
Yeah, we had some tours set up, which are now rescheduled, and we'll see if they don't get rescheduled again. It's just really uncertain. But what's cool is that we've actually had half of the album done, so we took the time to just finish the record, and which is now done and being mixed now. So it's just been bittersweet.
Okay, so for listeners who are unfamiliar, then why don't you tell people, Isaiah, how many records do you have out and kind of how long you guys been at this?
So yeah, we've been at it for, I want to say it's around 5-6 years, and we've got two EPs. Our first EP was called Cat and Mouse. Our second one was called Devil Fruit. And we put out our own full-length album called Delicious Rock Noise. And then we just put out ourselves on our record label, Little Man Records. We put out No Strange Cats, and we just did it ourselves with Kickstarter. And just yesterday, we were actually even just like folding the records and like really just creating them. So that's really some crazy stuff.
That was a cool project. I mean, you guys...
Very cool.
I forget when you started, but you had a goal of 7,500 and you blew past that to more than 26,000. And most of the fans look like opted for higher price support pledges. Explain some of the bonuses you got with the cat pictures and the cats on the cover of the album.
Yeah, so cool.
Yeah, like for certain tiers, like one of the tiers, it's like you get your cat on an insert that's going to have all the cats on it. And then another tier up was like you get to actually have your cat on the record, actually. Oh, not on the record, but as the cover. And it's a full-on custom cover of your own. And then even higher, we threw in a grab bag of just like we threw crazy stuff in there. Like some people are going to be getting like Jack White passes, you know, like the stuff we had on us, like the Damned. Oh, cool. Like some people are getting some cool stuff, like stuff that was even kind of hard to give away, actually.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like, but you know, but the fans were so cool and they opted for those high tier things. It's like we have to actually give away. I gave away like some Blu-rays even. Like, someone's getting Deadpool on Blu-ray.
Nice.
Blade Runner Final Cut.
Cool.
But I do have like 5 copies of just Blade Runner. So it wasn't a huge drop for me.
I love that. And Isaiah, let me ask too, you mentioned it, but are you guys hand assembling each one individually and sending it out by yourselves? That's also very cool.
The custom covers, yes. And okay. That was insane. We're just lucky that they had the creases and the folds because it was almost we were going to have to even cut them ourselves.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it took some time. When I really saw that that's what we were going to be doing yesterday, I was like, wow, really? And you just had to lock it down, get a technique going, and then just get them all done. It was pretty insane.
Get an assembly line going and just knock them out. That's cool. But it's such a cool project. I love anytime an artist takes another step to make it a little more personal. What was it that inspired that idea for you guys, Isaiah? I think it's such a cool, unique idea. Was there a certain, you know, event or moment that triggered that idea?
Well, basically, after getting dropped from Sony, we arranged that we get dropped with all of our music we had just put out. We were going to be able to do a release of No Strange Cats, but only 500 copies.
Mm-hmm.
But we were lucky. So we were just basically like, okay, so we got with our label buddy, and he was, you know, helped us come up with kind of a game plan for what we should do to put this album out.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we were just kind of like, okay, well, we can only sell 500, so let's do a Kickstarter so we can at least make the most of it and also not have to go out of our own pockets kind of to pay for it. Like, it was nice to just, for it to all happen and there's a release. And yeah, so it was just cool because it all really depends on if your album is something that your fans even want or if you even have the fans to do it. And we were lucky that we were actually in a position to even do it.
Yeah. That's cool. And I'm assuming they're all gone, right? There's no more copies available. Okay.
I mean, we may have a few laying around, actually. There may end up being, like, test pressings and things like that. Like, things that were a little bit messed up, but honestly could still play, that kind of thing.
Sure.
Now, you had finished that album when, Isaiah?
It was, like, either a year or two ago, and we actually put it out digitally because the labels just, like, didn't really believe in it. We got them to put it out digitally so it didn't get shelved, you know, the fans could actually hear it.
Yep.
And that was a really good move on our part because there's horror stories of bands getting shelved and those are expensive records that then no one ever hears. So we were really lucky to be able to get those songs out and then later be like, okay, now that when we're getting dropped, we can try to get those songs to release physically because luckily we got them out there, you know.
So it sounds like you didn't have necessarily a great experience with the major label. So I want to just ask about that real quick because, you know, you guys are a young band and maybe you're starting to get some attention already and then you get signed to Sony. It must have been exciting at first, right?
It was something. Now, originally we got to have a really bad situation with our original label, which, you know, I don't have any bad feelings about because we, in return, we did get a lot of our experience and hookups from them. So it just is what it is. And we were just free agents for a while and we got signed to a label called Another Century. And that was an active rock label.
Mm-hmm.
And they did amazing. We were kind of like the stars of the label. Our record was shooting up the charts. We actually passed Nickelback, which was a big goal of ours.
Wow.
Yeah, on Billboard, you know, active rock.
Wow.
But that was cool. So that was a thing we always set out to do, and we did it. And then next thing you know, Sony comes and absorbs this label. Next thing you know, they don't understand or care about rock or anything that we've done.
Right.
So some people in there were cool, but a couple people can't control a whole big thing. So luckily, we got hit up by the MasterCard people, and they were looking for just bands and that got us enough cred to stay on Sony's good graces for a little while, but not long, you know.
Yeah. Is it hard to be a rock band these days?
Absolutely. It is absolutely hard because I feel like a lot of people don't even realize that they would like rock or want it. Some rock, I agree, is a little formulaic and, you know, by the numbers. And some people think, oh, rock is that, you know, they don't even think about a bunch of bands that exist that are doing crazy things and are doing wild samples and just, you know, all around. Just I just like a real drum kit and some kind of guitar. And you can be rock with just those two things, or even just your vibe, just like some cymbals, some crash cymbals.
Yeah. You know, when you mentioned some people don't really think there's really rock, is rock dead? I hear that all the time. You know, and that's why people listen to just classic rock or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing that captured me when I saw you guys initially was not only did you have crafted songs and had good stage presence, but you guys had energy, you know, and that's really something that attracted me to the music you guys make. I don't know who all that's listened to the episode has actually heard their music. Maybe we should play a track from No Strange Cats. Is there a song you think would be good for people to hear, Isaiah?
I would recommend the song Not Smart.
Talk about how you guys craft your songs. Where did the idea for that song come in? Who writes the lyrics and who writes the music?
It's a pretty wild collaboration with us, and it goes in a lot of directions. Sometimes it's like someone has a song idea, or someone just has a riff, or Saul has a drum beat, or someone's like, let's do a song like this. Or we're even just jamming together. And this one specifically, Saul came in and he was working on an idea. Something kind of like We Will Rock You and Weezer's Beverly Hills, like one of those type songs, like one that's like got a good, you can clap to it. It's got just like a nice beat and it's very simple. We wanted to do our take on something like that. And we had a specifically complicated guitar pattern to where something that sounds like you could just pick up and play it. But once you started learning it, you'd be like, oh, it's 1, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Like, we made it specifically hard. So you would think, oh, this is kind of generic, but you try to play it, you would not be able, it would take you a minute. That's the kind of trick of the song.
Okay.
Kind of building on that, Isaiah, I'd love to kind of hear what's going on with the new music. You mentioned that you had some songs recorded before the pandemic, sort of locked everything down. Is that right?
Yes.
And then you finished what is another album. Did you guys do that at home or did you have access to a place where you guys all could go and sort of your own coronavirus bubbles, like where everyone's, you know, been together the whole time or whatever?
Totally.
Or how did that process go? I'm very curious to hear about that.
Yes. Yeah, so half of the record we had recorded at West End in Kansas City. Kansas City, Kansas, actually. And that had been really cool. We self-produced it, and that was interesting. This is the album where we've taken all of the producers, all of the things we've learned, and we're finally just doing all of it by ourselves.
Yeah.
And so after a while, the pandemic happens, and they were like, okay, if things are reopening, let's go into the studio and finish this record. So we did a bunch of pre-production at home. Mm-hmm. So basically, we could just track everything at the studio really fast.
Yep.
And it's pretty wild. Like, we were just listening today, and we really think it's the best stuff we've done so far, just because it's got lots of changes, and it's just, there's a lot going on. I mean, obviously, Portraits and Bend are already out, and those are going to be on the record, and that's a decent idea of how weird we're going with it. I'm really excited for everyone to hear it, because we're just in the mixing process, and it's pretty cool.
And when do you expect the record to be out?
We expect it to be out around September-ish or something like that.
Okay.
But the cool thing is, we've already got a single and a music video like ready to go.
Oh, cool.
So as soon as we get artwork for the album, we're going to drop the single and the music video and let everyone know what's going on.
All right. I want to get back to that in a second. But first, I want to ask you this. Because of the health crisis and the lack of touring going on right now, how does that play into when you want to release an album? I mean, do you want to wait until you know for sure you'll be able to go and support it on the road? What kind of thinking goes into this?
See, that's a good question. And some bands... I want to say Weezer is one of them. They chose to push the new album and it's going to come out with the new tour, which is an interesting idea because a couple singles have already come out from said album. So it's like, that's an interesting thing to wait so long for.
Yeah.
Whereas Green Day put out their album, it's just out, which I think we're going to go that route. We've thought about it just because everyone's waiting around. It's like, let's give them an album to listen to. I want to be a band that's like, yeah, here's a new album to check out while you're just at home ready to listen to new music. You know? Because either way, we're just going to tour on old music anyways. Like, we're always going to play shows. So I just feel like our fans are honestly, we wait so long to put out music. We're kind of terrible about it. I would say we're one of the terrible bands when it comes to putting out new music. And our fans, they really like the new stuff, and we make them wait so long, so that's a factor, too. It's like, yeah, we just got to get it out. Got to get it out there.
I think it's a tough calculation, you know, which way is better to go. It's weird. Like you said, people have time, I guess, to listen to music, but there is something about a band being on tour which just creates kind of a buzz around that band and that music and being on tour, or maybe even making live appearances on TV or web shows or that kind of stuff, you know, just being active. You know, I was just thinking about this today or yesterday, I can't remember, but like Pearl Jam released an album like a couple of months ago or a month ago or something like that. And it was like a big deal for like, I don't know, a day or a week or something. And it's like gone now. It's like it may well not have existed because I think a band like that has to be on the road for it.
That's,
you know,
so funny,
to have some real impact, don't you think?
Yeah, I downloaded it. I listened to it a couple times when I'm walking or driving or whatever, but it's very quickly covered up by new albums.
Yeah.
You know, consumers of music aren't going out and buying music. They kind of stay home and order it on the internet or just stream it. And if you don't have that in front of you, you know, you kind of forget about it. But, you know, what's great about Radke, they've done streaming stuff. They also played two of the first electric shows I've seen stream.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
And you guys even went on the road to do one a couple of weeks ago. You guys went to Tulsa right after the Trump rally. What was that like?
Yes, it was weird. It was weird. It's like, oh, okay, we're going to Tulsa too. Yeah. So that was interesting, especially after you hear it didn't go so good. So that was pretty fun. But but it just felt great to hear music coming out of like monitors. Because streaming like acoustic is cool, but we're just not an acoustic band, you know? So we make it work and we do what we can, but we just want to rock, you know, even if we have to convert our downstairs to a little bit more of an electric setup for one stream, that can be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Isaiah, we were talking to another group, right, Jim, and they were sort of saying something pretty similar. You know, it was like, yeah, you know, we can do this and we can pass songs back and forth over the internet and email and stuff like that. But until we're in the room with the instruments turned up, you know, it's not quite the same vibe for us. It's not really us, you know, it's a different version of us. And that sounds kind of like how you guys feel. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something you mentioned, Isaiah, just a little bit ago when you were talking about the new music. You said that you were finally able to take all the things that you've kind of learned on your different studio experiences and begin to do that kind of production and oversight yourselves. Can you expand a little bit more on that? I think it's really fascinating because you guys have been in so many different situations that you must have picked up a tremendous amount of knowledge and, you know, being learners like you are, it must be pretty cool. You must feel like you really do have a lot of knowledge about how to create the sound you want.
Absolutely. Saul and I were just having a conversation about this morning and yesterday about how it's like going to like college or something. And then you're learning things. Sometimes things are hard. You learn some things and kind of realize you actually aren't as good as you thought in some aspects of traditional recording where you actually do need to be good. So those things get arranged. Like, for instance, even as small as like the way I played bass, on my left hand, sometimes I would ever so slightly bend just the note out of tune, you know, just because I wasn't going straight on, you know. So that's something you have to learn. And then it's like, oh, so I've been kind of bending my notes slightly out of tune, unacceptable in a recording environment.
Right.
Okay, cool. So that's something you learn. And then you learn, you get the classic rock type producer, which was our first album. It was really cool. Real, not loose, but also didn't feel like there were too many rules while, you know, there was definitely a nice relationship going on.
Yep.
Second time, I would compare it more to, like Foo Fighters describe recording Color in the Shape. Fun, but real harsh. Lots of things you didn't think were important.
Yeah.
To an extent to where it's almost funny. And it sounds amazing, the product in the end. Now, then you take all of that, and then you've got your Radke production stuff.
Yeah.
And I forgot to mention, we worked with another dude who's really close in our band. He's helped with some stuff, like, on some singles as far as, like, ideas with production. And he's really into space. Like, he can tell us, like, check out this Rolling Stones record and just listen to the guitar on it, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, so you're saying that we kind of overload our songs with guitar. It's maybe more powerful if we let it ring out a little bit, then let it stop for a bit, then some big, you know what I mean? Make the guitar almost sing with the vocals, and phrasing is something. Mm-hmm. So you've got that. And then when you mix, so for instance, Blasting Room, open space is generally like filled with harmonies, guitar things. Like there's a lot going on in what would be, the other guy would rather have, let's just keep it open and kind of cool, you know? So we, Radke production style is more picking what we like in the situation. Like, we want a mix. Like, we definitely want more space here, but not as much as he would want.
Yeah.
But we definitely don't want as much in it as he wants, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely something. But I mean, there's times in this time where we're like, oh, did we put a harmony there? And then after listening to it, it's like, there's so many happening later. Let's just let this part breathe. This could be the part where the song breathes, you know? Sometimes we'll squeeze a song to death and, you know, you got to stop us from doing that. Or you can just be scared of them and let them suffocate your song.
Yeah.
You know?
That, to me, makes me very excited to hear this new music because it seems like you've taken something from every experience you guys have had and tucked it away in your mind. I think it's so fascinating, such an interesting comment. I can't wait to hear how all that goes down on the record and what the finished product is.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a good question because I like to have that on the record, talking about that kind of stuff. Because like back in the day, you know, you would self-produce stuff in the demo. You think your demo is awesome. You'd take it to the studio with the producer. You just hear just how legit it sounds after. You're like, man, we didn't have it.
Right.
So many things came after that were awesome. But now we can kind of do it and be like, wow, this sounds like we had a producer on this. What? And even from the GarageBand studio demo, like we're kind of getting it sounding that good. So it's like we'll probably end up getting Pro Tools sometime. And someday you'll probably hear of us producing rock records and all kinds of stuff.
Because that's cool.
The more we learn, my thing is like if you want to sound a little bit like Radke, we can definitely do that for you.
Yeah.
As far as big choruses and guitars, like
right.
Do your own thing. But if you want a little bit of that, we can easily bring as much as you would like of that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's so interesting because, I mean, I read a lot about music history and producers and who bands choose for certain things, but that's such a good point. I mean, if you're going to choose a guy like, I don't know, Daniel Lanois or Brian Eno, your record's going to sound like the records they produced, you know?
Totally.
And that should factor into your decision. So, man, I could hear you guys, you know, tucking away all that knowledge to become producers, you know, in your own right, too. So that's really exciting.
You can't go wrong if you're trying to sound, you know, a little bit like the Stones, let's say. That's
totally.
I mean, those guys, you know, they were masters at getting their sound on records, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like it's so great. But I also don't think people would correct Keith if he didn't bend the note right. Like that would just be on the record.
Yeah. See, and that's something you don't want to lose all the time.
Right.
You know, you kind of want some of that. You want it to kind of be an accident. You want it to be something you didn't notice for a while, and then there's now, a weird line.
How much do you guys play together in the studio? Do you do it all separately, or do you actually like, you know, play live in the studio?
For our EP Devil Fruit, that had a lot of live stuff. Like there's no metronome on that. And that's kind of an interesting record. We go pretty wild on that when we were younger. But nowadays, we kind of try to do like a Beatles-y kind of thing where we're mostly just coming up with songs and then collaborating in a GarageBand studio setting. Mm-hmm. And then the goal is to, in the future, like kind of the Beatles be like, all right, now we go to the studio to work on a couple of these and just see how they sound, work with this guy, you know, just as a hang more like that. And maybe record those same songs with someone else as a hang. And then at some point, maybe a year and a half down the line, you've got this crazy album, you know.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, you know, you have new music out that people can listen to. You know, if you take a song like Bend, you know, is that an example of where you might be shaping the guitar a bit and allowing for some space?
That's absolutely true. And we specifically put out a couple songs to kind of let everyone know that we're going a little crazy. Like, I would say the absolute inspiration for this album would be like classic rock kind of stuff, like The Who kind of sounds. Like, and in their kind of big dramatic songs, like Bob O'Reilly and things like that, we're doing some, you know, obviously some guitar ringing, some The Who kind of stuff on purpose. And yeah, it's just, this is going to be really classic rock sounding. Like, a little bit of the groove from Delicious Rock Noise is present, because we kind of eliminated all of that from No Strange Cats just to change it up. So the kind of heavy groove is a little bit back, but there's still some kind of light stuff, and we've still got like St. Elwood type songs. I mean, it's going to be the one I'm listening to, you know, as far as it goes. So I'm excited for everyone to be able to hear it.
Yeah, that is exciting.
I don't play, but I pretend. Half stack faith is. They don't jam while I listen. Straight good vibe ace is. Scary movie that never ends.
Already on your agenda, I saw that you guys were announced to be at Riot Fest in Chicago in September 2021. You guys played there before, right?
Yes. I think I want to say it was 2015. It was a really cool show, and it's been a really long time since we've played there again, and I'm just stoked to share a bill with Smashing Pumpkins and Pixies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's just like, I hope to get to see both bands, but like, that's like a dream. And then Fishbone's there, and Living Color's there, Run the Jewels is there. It's going to be crazy.
You know, have you ever seen Fishbone live?
Yes. And what's funny is that was actually our first live show ever was Fishbone.
Okay. Because I was going to say, you guys have a lot of energy to your live show. I've seen you play twice, both times at the Black Cat. But it's funny you mentioned Fishbone, because they put on about as energetic a live show as anybody. And I get a lot of that same vibe with you guys. So you must have learned something from watching them play, right?
Oh, yeah. Because like a band dropped off that bill. We hopped on. It was first show. It was cool. We're super young. Played it. It was awesome. And to play that kind of show as your first show, and then to see them destroy the stage and just be so amazing was like, wow, this is just a really good example of a really amazing band. So that was just a really legendary night. I think they're going to make it into that Dave Grohl doc we're doing. We want to make sure that Fishbone's part of how we actually came up as a band, because just the fact that we were able to play that show, I mean, it was impossible to quit, because you had to feel that feeling again of a packed show.
Yeah.
I don't think they know what the Dave Grohl doc is, Isaiah. What can you tell them about that?
Yeah. There's actually an article about it. It's called What Drives Us, and it's a movie about bands and vans and bands touring in vans. And it's got a lot of people in it, and they wanted a band that was kind of ground level, and they hit us up.
Oh, very cool. I find this so interesting, because one of the times you were here in DC, you opened for Jack White. Unfortunately, I was at the show the next night. They had a different opener. There must have been more than just that one date, right?
Yes, it was four shows.
Okay, four shows. You mentioned this connection with Foo Fighters, and you were going to be on the bill at this big festival, 4th of July festival show that they were going to have here in DC at the football stadium. And then, you know, you mentioned bands like Fishbone and stuff like this. So it must be gratifying, I guess, that you have the ear of these pretty big rock acts, right? Yeah. They like you.
It's an honor, for real, because you grow up listening to those bands, and you grow up hearing them, and one of the biggest things is that after something like that happens, it's like, oh, cool, we're a real band. We're not what is technically referred to as a baby band anymore. You're a baby band for a long time until you start doing stuff like that. And then you're still just opening. There's still so much more to do. So it was really cool. And like I said, it makes you feel like a real band. It makes you feel like anything someone says to you is like, okay, I mean, what do you know? I'm with Dave Grohl and Jack White. So it gives you this amazing shield of like hater reflection. So that's an interesting thing. And it feels amazing to be justified like that. It's like, because your goal is to even just meet these people, and to be kind of endorsed by them and showed around to their fans is the ultimate honor. It really is. It's
It's mind-blowing.
I think that's awesome. I think that's
amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, it really is.
Especially for you guys. I mean, you know, again, as I mentioned, you guys do a great live show, but, you know, it sounds like, you know, you're still trying to get your feet under you in terms of, like, being a solid label behind you or that kind of thing, or having, you know, that, you know, you've been through a lot in that area. Yep. So it's great to hear that there are people out there who matter, who notice you and want to champion you, right?
Yep. And because Saul and I were just talking about, like, it was starting to fizzle out. We've been a black rock band for so long. When is it going to catch on? We're starting to get confused, and we start to have fans at the shows be like, this, like, what's going on at this point? Like, why are you still playing to 20 people? And it's like, I don't know. And then Jack White calls, MasterCard calls, and it's like, yes, because I don't know what we were going to do if someone didn't finally just be like, hey, these guys are awesome and are actually a real band that you guys should consider. Let's not just let them fade away. Because they've been working for so many years, you know, and that was great because, you know, it was getting weird. It was just like, you know, we're putting music out, we're playing, touring constantly. It's like, when do you get these big gigs, you know?
Yeah. I guess that's what I was trying to say. Yeah, it's the business side. That's the tough part, right? Creatively, you guys are doing awesome, and it's good that people are noticing that, but it's the business side that is the hard part, unfortunately, right?
Yep.
Isaiah, you mentioned, you know, being known as a black rock band. I mean, I'd love to get your take on what's happening in the world today. I mean, you guys have never shied away from speaking about your experiences as young black men and also about society, you know, even back to your first record. I mean, you know, what do you think is happening now? Do you see some chance of a social reckoning or some leveling of the playing field and some empathy happening out in the world?
I'll tell you what, I really do, because, you know, we've got songs, we've been talking about the inequality and bad things happening, and sometimes these bad things happen and people become kind of numb to them, and you're like, all right, why is no one caring about this murder or this murder or this murder? But then you get one that's very specific and extra, you know, long, and then everyone's like, oh, well, now we need to do some reform. And I'm just on the side of everyone evaluating, like, what's going on. Cartoons. It's like Cleveland from Family Guy. Like, he's voiced by a white guy. I think those jokes are hilarious. You know what I mean? And it's almost, it's a bummer that you're not going to have that. But then again, it's like, well, so many jobs for black actors are open now. So that's the part of the reform. It's like, good things are starting to happen. Like, Aunt Jemima, that thing's changing. So I would say that I think things are starting to change. I think people are starting to realize, like Kansas City, we're sure we're going to pass a thing on the 9th where you can have weed. Cops are going to take it off of their list completely. That's the kind of stuff that's actually starting to happen now. And things that directly affect black people. It sucks that it's taken this long because this stuff's been happening for a long time. But it's like, yeah, let's look at the black voice actors situation. It would be one thing if a white guy was voicing a black voice if it wasn't the only thing that was available. You know what I mean? It'd be a different situation if there was like, oh yeah, but there's like 50 other shows where the black people are all the black people. You know, it's not the case, and that needs to be changed.
Yep.
Even if you lose some of the characters that you are attached to, who cares about what you think about that? You know? So it's like, there's things like that happening, and I would consider the cartoon thing small, the Aunt Jemima thing middle level, and then the cop Kansas City weed thing pretty big, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things people are trying, and I appreciate that. You know, it sucks how long it takes. And yeah, man, it's just a complicated situation where, you know, we need to make major changes. Yeah, it's crazy.
Is this affecting any of the music you guys are writing right now or making right now?
I would say in the way we recorded it, there's probably like a feeling in there. But like, for instance, we have a song called Stains. And that was actually a song that was turned down from our producer in the blasting room session. But we love the song, so we went ahead and recorded it now. But it's a fairly political-sounding song, and it just fits this situation. So it's just like, there's those kinds of parallels where it's like, I mean, yeah, it's going to sound like we were writing about now, but this demo, which you could even hear the demo, the iGarageBand demo was from back when we were about to go to the blasting room like a year ago.
Very interesting. And I mean, it's like you were saying, Isaiah, things have bubbled to the surface, and that's good. But, you know, there are those roots that go so, so deep that we have to work on tearing out. And that's an ongoing process. You know, it's like you were saying, it's just a battle that you have to keep working on and working on and working on. And sometimes it'll be high profile and sometimes it won't, but it's never going to go away.
So. Within the music business, have people stereotyped you and said, you know, this isn't what we think of necessarily as black music today, or, you know, you should be doing something else other than, you know, this type of stuff. Have you faced that at all?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't easy to get our first record deal and stuff like that. It took, when we went to Brooklyn and recorded our Cat and Mouse video with Rec Room, for people to actually see a session of us playing the song so they can see it and believe what's actually happening. And once that video came out, things were kind of fast-tracked for us. Because, like, oh, okay, things made more sense. Because it was really hard, you know? Because we got turned down, obviously, Old Story, but with the picture, for instance, we got turned down from a place at Hammerjacks in St. Joe because they said, we don't book rap groups. And there was a demo, so they didn't even listen to it. So, that's the kind of stuff you do face. There are walls. Luckily, there weren't too many. But, like, for instance, there was a big car commercial we were up for back in the day when we lived in St. Joe. And the money was really good, and it would have really helped us. And we were pretty much about to sign this deal. Turns out they were using us as leverage for this more popular band that's related to a Bad Brain, I believe. One of the Bad Brains called The Bots. And then I remember just getting kind of shafted and being like, oh, wow. I just remember crying and, like, going on a walk, just being like, wow, this sucks. I don't know what to do, you know?
Yeah.
So I remember I actually met the guy from The Bots, and I pretended that I didn't know who he was. And he'd never done anything to me, and he was a fan of the band. I've never told the story before, but and it even caused me to be a dick to another person. You know what I mean? That's a brother, pretty much. But it's like, just the business made me just be like, I need to get my dig on you because you got so much money I was going to get. You're a good guy, but I hate what the business has pitted me against you. You know what I mean? And yeah, it was in Netherlands. And here's another story from that same day. In Netherlands, back in the day, if you're playing a festival, if you wanted to get weed, you just talk to the people working there and they go pick it up for you. Mm-hmm. And when my weed delivery arrived, and they're like, the Bots, right? And I just told her, no, we're the other black band. And then the friend started laughing because it's like, I'm sick of the Bots. So yeah, it, like, that kind of thing happened a couple times with money, you know, when we're poor. So that kind of thing really grinds your gears. But, you know, it's a complicated thing, and hopefully some of that stuff comes to life. Like with our Little Man Records, the ambition is to, in the future when we get this label off, to start helping more bands like Radkey that were going to fade away if someone didn't help, you know? Someone that understands that there's so many extra walls.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the things I've always admired about you guys, Isaiah, is your spirit of continuing to work on stuff and plow ahead and not give up. I mean, I think that's just an amazingly admirable quality in this day and age when it would be so easy to be discouraged.
Yep.
You know, I've messed around in a band a long time ago and realized how unbelievably hard it is to make progress. And I can't say how impressed I am by you guys and being so invigorated about new music and kind of taking things as they come in every turn. And I will say, Jim, for the record, I mean, those listeners to our show who have been around for a long time may remember that we did talk to Radkey back on the old show too. Yep. So we've known them through Mike, and it's just amazing to hear that you guys are in such a good place and overcoming such a difficult obstacle like this pandemic. It's just particularly hard on artists and creators, you know, to deal with it. But I get fired up whenever I think about Radkey and talk to these guys. So.
Thank you.
No, it's cool. It's very cool. And you guys, you know, it warms my heart when I see that, like, you know, you're back in town and you're open for, like, somebody like Jack White. And then it's the Foo Fighters thing and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, it's cool. You guys are, you know, working hard. You're out there trying to make it happen. So hats off to you. One last thing I want to ask you about is tell me about the Bill Withers cover that you guys released.
Oh,
Dee had an idea. We were trying to come up with covers for a song back when we recorded The Batch at West End. And we needed a couple covers, and Dee had wanted to do the Bill Withers cover, and we're like, oh, cool. He had a really rocked out version, and then we just kind of, like, used that as, like, the insane finale and just did, like, a nice, chill, like, dusty-sounding, like, tribute. And then we were just going to put it on the album, and then he ended up passing away, so we're just like, what? So, I mean, we'll just pay the tribute and just live stream the song. We'll play his song and play ours right here just now, because, like, I mean, come on, like, might as well. Yeah, it was a kind of crazy. I was like, that sucks. We might as well just, like, just throw the song out there as a tribute, just because what else do you do, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What a great songwriter. So
yeah,
good choice there with the Ain't No Sunshine.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, because like if the best songs can be rocked out easily or turned into a pop song easily.
Yeah,
Isaiah, for folks who are listening and want to track you guys, you guys are very active on social media.
Mm-hmm.
You're at Radke Rock on Instagram,
mm-hmm.
at Radke, and it's Radkey on Twitter, and then at Radke Band on Facebook. And you could see you guys have been planting lately. I've seen like vegetables on Instagram, right?
Yeah, you can totally see who I am through it because I'm like, okay, I need my own food source. And not only that, I need to know how to do it. So this is my year. I'm just learning all of it. So next year, I'm just going to know how to grow potatoes and all the stuff. And I'm not going to be scared, or I'm going to be less scared. Because I acquired all of these skills just this year. So it's like, next year, let's do it.
Renaissance man.
Yeah. Yeah. And made an album. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Very cool. All right. Well, thanks very much for coming on.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you again.
Thanks,
Mike. Thanks for having me. Yeah, we went deep. That was cool. Yeah, that was a fun time.
So appreciate it. And thanks, Mike,
for
setting this up.
Thank you, Mike, as always.
My pleasure.
So when things... you know, get better out there and you're able to get in that van again, get out on the road, we encourage listeners, check out Radke when they come to your town.
Absolutely.
It's delicious rock noise, and you're going to really...
Yeah.
You're going to leave
it is.
With your face melted. All right.
Truly.
Thanks, man. And say hi to the others for us as well.
Do that.
Yes, we'll do.
Be safe, man.
All right.
Thank you. You too.
And if anyone out there would like to support the show, go to patreon.com/suburbspod. And if anybody would like to comment on the show, call and leave a message,
612-440-1984.
Or email rock@suburbspod.com. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at suburbspod. And, you know, follow Radke on all the socials and get their records and do all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
All right. And yeah, all your music is streaming on all the big streaming platforms, and then people can buy some physical product, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
What's the Radke? There's a radke.net website.
There you go.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool. All right. Thanks very much, guys. It's,
thank you.
Absolutely.
It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
With us has been
Isaiah Radke.
Yep.
And Mike Schneider.
All right. We'll talk to you guys later. Hey, I'm in need of something alone, but ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day.
Yeah, here's a new album to check out while you're just at home, ready to listen to new music.